Well, welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
And I'm Banner Austin.
And we are so excited to be with you today. Each week we have the chance to interview a voice of light, and today we have the distinct privilege to be with our current Lieutenant Governor and future Governor of the great state of Utah, Spencer Cox. Spencer, welcome and thank you for being with us.
Well, Dave, it's great to be back with you. I know we haven't done the podcast together before, but we've certainly spent a lot of time together. And I wish this wasn't virtual, but I'm glad we still can connect with technology.
Well, we're so grateful to be with you. And I guess I should say proud Aggie, Spencer Cox, right?
Yeah, I am a proud Aggie, and I'm not afraid to admit it in front of the BYU Management Society. But as we've talked before, BYU also has a very special place in my heart, and it's been a fun football season. Really tough loss, but it's been fun to cheer the Cougars on this year.
Yeah, it has been a great season and a tough loss for sure. I wanted to just ask you if you can maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself. What was your journey to get to this point?
Yeah, well, it's a very unlikely journey, I guess I would say, and I still vacillate between kind of pinching myself that I'm actually here and then trying to overcome the imposter syndrome that makes me feel like I have no business being here, which I think is something maybe a lot of people can relate to. But born and raised in the small town of Fairview, where I'm raising my family now, and We moved away. After going to Utah State, I went to law school back in Virginia, came back to work for a big law firm, and decided, my wife and I, that we needed to come back to the farms where we grew up in San Pete County, both of us, and to raise our kids here. And that's what we did. And I ran the telecommunications company that my great-grandfather started over 100 years ago, and got involved in local politics at the city council level, and then as mayor. And then as a county commissioner, and then in the House of Representatives, all part time. And then out of nowhere, 7 years ago, Governor Herbert asked me to serve as his lieutenant governor. I was a freshman in the House of Representatives, and it was a very tough decision for us, one we weren't excited about, and one we really didn't want to do at the time, but felt like we were supposed to, and ended up here. And that kind of repeated itself a year ago when we decided to run for governor, and somehow I'm still not sure how, and still not sure what's happening in 2020, but apparently we won, and so we're here and really excited to be able to work with so many incredible people in leading the state starting on January 4th.
That's awesome. So obviously, you know, serving with Governor Herbert for these many years, obviously you've probably picked up and learned a lot from him and seen his leadership style, and maybe give us an idea of what this transition looks like. And is there anywhere that you feel like you'll be a different governor in any way compared to Governor Herbert?
Yeah. So we haven't had a real transition in this state for 16 years. Governor Herbert didn't get a transition because of the way he became governor. You'll remember he was the lieutenant governor and woke up one day and found out that Governor Huntsman had accepted the role of being the ambassador to China. And suddenly he was the governor. So he didn't get to go through that transition. There are certainly differences between Governor Herbert and I. I don't point those out. The people will get to decide what those differences are. He's my hero. He's a mentor. He's been an incredible public servant, the longest serving governor in the country right now. He's the dean of governors, and I've learned so much from him. I mean, certainly our style is a little different. I'm the age of his kids, so I mean, there's a fairly obvious difference there, and I try to engage with people in little different ways, which I think is reflected in maybe that generational gap. Use social media in different ways, but from a policy perspective, there there will be some differences. But most importantly, I think, and I think the reason I was elected is because people like what has happened over the past 10 years, like the things that Governor Herbert has prioritized. They like the fact that he's not a divisive leader, that he really cares about bringing people together and trying to find solutions. And he's very practical. And those are the lessons that he has taught me and that I will continue to follow in I hope, very meaningful ways that will allow Utah to really be an example to the rest of the country as we have been over the past decade.
I love that. I actually have two questions. My first question is, what is your favorite all-time church calling? And my second question is, for those of us who are younger, what hope should we have for the future?
Well, both very different questions and both very good questions, Banner. So I would have answered this a year ago very differently. The first one, my favorite church calling, and I've held it a couple times, is gospel doctor and teacher. I love it because your calling is basically just to study the scriptures and have a discussion, which are things we should be doing anyway. And so I really, really love that. But my favorite calling is the calling I have now, and I'm very sad because it's one of the few callings that COVID has almost completely taken away, and that is that I am the primary song leader, or the chorister, as we used to say. So I get to play games and sing songs with little kids every Sunday, and it's awesome. And I think everyone should get a chance to do that. So I know they think it's a little weird. They see me on TV and then I'm there on Sunday, and it's just a ball. So the question about the future, I have four kids. My oldest is at college right now. He's 21. I have a missionary that just turned 20, another son that's a senior, and then my little girl that's 14. And these are the things I think about often. And I know, look, there's a lot of crazy stuff happening in the world, and our country is very divided. And it would be easy to get discouraged with what we're seeing, especially in 2020. Right. With the separation, the anxiety that so many young people have felt, we've seen it in our own kids, the isolation. We've seen it with the heartache that comes when there is a lack of civility in our country. We've seen civil unrest driven by people who feel like they've been marginalized. There's racism that is real. There, we see people who are different than us, who feel like they don't have a voice, and it's easy to get discouraged. But my message to you and to my kids and to young people is, there's never been a greater time in the history of the world to be alive right now. You have opportunities that people didn't even dream of just a decade ago. The economy is improving, but more importantly, what I love about Banner, you and your generation, is that you care about people, you care about each other, you care about humans more than you care about jobs or money or the economy or anything else. And while all those other things matter, and as governor, my job is to help make sure that we take care of those things. It matters more that you're good. And if you're good, good things will happen. It doesn't mean bad things won't happen, but it means that there will be opportunities. And we live in a place here in Utah where we really can come together to solve those big problems. But we need a new generation of people to help us solve those problems. We can't expect politics as usual or the way things have always been done to change the way to the way things need to be. And so we're looking for new people with new ideas. I am encouraged because young people voted this year. It shows me that they care, because historically that hasn't been the case. And this time you showed up, and when you showed up, people have to pay attention to you, and you're a force to be reckoned with. So keep your chin up. There is so much to be excited about.
Well, that's a great answer. And my wife is also the current primary song leader, Banner's mom.
Yes.
It's her favorite calling too.
We have a giant Facebook group with like thousands of people. I don't know if she's on it, but I'm one of the only guys on it. And it's awesome because we share ideas and we share games and cutouts and all kinds of things. And man, it's the best. So we'll have to get her hooked up.
That's awesome. Spencer, we just heard from our prof about the importance of giving thanks. I wanted to ask you, and every time I've texted you, you've always texted back an expression of thanks. What role does gratitude play in our lives and how has it helped you in yours?
Wow. So here's the thing, like from a gospel perspective, that was absolutely inspired, right? And remember, he said that he was going to share with us a prescription for our problems. And of course, he's a doctor, right? And a surgeon, world renowned surgeon. And that was the prescription. And what's interesting about it, of course, there is a foundation. We're commanded to give thanks in all things. And so we should absolutely be doing that. But there's also science behind it. And Arthur Brooks, who is a great author, who is a researcher, a social scientist, he's written books on this. I encourage people to look them up. His latest book called Love Your Enemies is fantastic, again, with a gospel title, but it's about politics in our country. But he looks at the science behind gratitude. And it's he's written several articles on it. And it is true. It's a scientific fact. They do brain scans that even faking or forcing yourself to be grateful, even if you don't feel it, just by stating or listing the things that you're grateful for, they've done the studies with control groups, real scientific stuff. And they've seen that when we do that, when we kind of force ourselves to be grateful, it releases those endorphins and we end up being happier. And I think everyone I know wants to be happier, especially in 2020. And no matter how bad our circumstances are, and look, there is real suffering out there. And there was a little pushback that there's a lack of empathy when we're telling people they should be grateful in hard times. And that's not the case. I don't believe that at all. We can be empathetic. We can recognize that there is real suffering. And at the same time, we can find ways to be grateful, anything. And when we do that, the science shows we'll be happier and it gets easier next time. We've all been around people who aren't grateful for anything. They suck the energy out of us and they make lives darker. This world needs more light. And the best way to do that is through gratitude. It changed my life. It certainly changed my timeline. I actually could be on Facebook again for a few minutes without losing my mind. Just seeing people just stating their reasons for being grateful. Some people who I know are struggling. I wish he hadn't just said to do it for 7 days. I wish he said, I know it's not meet that we be commanded in all things. Maybe we should do it without him, but let's just keep doing it. Let's keep going. Let's say what we're grateful for.
Yeah. Love that. So with the theme of, you know, Voices of Light of this segment we do on the podcast, I'm curious how you might approach that with, obviously as a leader, you want to instill hope and light and encouragement, but also you've got to probably got a lot of tough decisions ahead of you as you consider all the dynamics, especially during a pandemic. How do you balance that with establishing hope and encouragement in those constituents that you lead while still making tough decisions that maybe some people don't like?
Well, it'd be easy to put on a smile and tell you it's easy, but it's gut-wrenching at times. And we've certainly seen that. We've seen, you know, even in Utah, we're very proud of Utah. And we talk often about how united we are and how we always work together and look out for the common good. The past 9 months have tested that and strained it a little bit. We've certainly seen some divides inside the church, outside the church, inside my party, outside my party. We're very divided as a country, and contention. You know, people seem to believe that that this idea that that contention is evil is true everywhere except in politics. And then it's okay. It's okay if we treat people terribly in politics. We wouldn't think of doing it to our neighbors, to someone at church, anywhere else, but in politics, it's okay. I'm a disciple of Abraham Lincoln. Some of your listeners may have read the book Team of Rivals, which is the best biography I've ever read. And it's a must read for everyone. and to see the way that he approached it in the worst of times. We have a little bit of recency bias, always thinking that this was the worst year, or this was the worst time, or we're more divided than ever before, and forget that we actually had a civil war, and you know, brother fought against brother, and father against son, and the way he handled the worst of situations, personally included, by the way, losing his children, a wife that was suffering from debilitating mental illness, and the people who vilified him, whom not only did he forgive, but he invited into his administration and gave them authority, even as they continued to undermine him. That's true Christ-like love, and I believe we're commanded to do that even in politics and even in public office. And so we've tried really hard to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, that the people that we disagree with and who hate and despitefully use us, we're commanded to do good to them too, not just tolerate them or ignore them, but to actually do good. And that's a really hard thing to do, but there's such a power in it. When, there was a recent example where we had protesters coming to our house, and we knew they were coming, and it was scary at first. My wife and kids were legitimately scared. We've never had anything like that. I think it's wrong, by the way. I mean, I think there are ways to publicly demonstrate against decisions, and, you know, we have public spaces for that. And attacking people in their homes, I think is wrong. And I was angry. And I was fired up, and I thought about what I wanted to do and say, and how I was going to react. And then I thought, I'm going to go out and confront them and let them know how I feel, let them know how inappropriate this is. And then I realized, first of all, that doesn't do any good. It doesn't change anybody's mind at all. Second of all, it's not who I am. And maybe if it is who I am, it's not who I want to be. And so we talked about it as a family and said, how can we do this differently? We got to work, and my wife and daughter made cookies, and my son and I made hot chocolate, and we took it out and we told them that we loved them, and we disagreed, but we loved them. And it was disarming in that moment. And I think they saw me as a real person. I don't know that it changed their mind, but at least it opened the door for conversations down the road that we can have. And that's I think what we're supposed to do. It's not that we shouldn't disagree. Don't get me wrong. We should disagree. We should disagree passionately. That's what our nation is founded on. But our nation is also founded on coming together and compromising. I mean, the Constitution is the grand compromise. Everyone agreed before, by the way, before they knew what was going to come out of that, they agreed that whatever came out, they would support, even if they disagreed with it. And that willingness to stick in there and to give a little, and to figure out a way to make it work, that's true patriotism. That's the spirit of liberty. Spirit of liberty isn't yelling and screaming and defacing property and saying that you're right. The spirit of liberty is that willingness to listen patiently, to learn from others, to state our opinion as passionately as we can, to try to persuade others to change minds, and then finding ways to come together.
Love that. And I saw that you did that, and I thought that was such an amazing example for all of us of how to do and what to do. I think that's one of the reasons why people are so excited about you serving, is because politics are so divisive. And I know we're at the end of our time. I have one final question for you. And I'm just curious, first of all, if there's anything we can do to not be so divisive. And then I guess my second question is, we're in this season of lighting the world. And when I think of lighting the world, I think of Pamela Atkinson as an example. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about her and what we can do in our own sphere of influence to light the world.
Sure. Well, for your listeners who don't know Pamela, and I hope they all do, Pamela is incredible. She is a member of a different faith, and she uses her faith. The governor often refers to her as the Mother Teresa of Utah, and she has dedicated her life to lifting the homeless and the impoverished, and she ministers to them, and she ministers among them. She doesn't just donate; she is there. She knows them by name. She is there when they're needed, and she has been a true shining light. When I think of Light the World, I too think of Pamela. In fact, one of the Light the World challenges, I think, was to post on social media someone that you're thankful for, somebody you admire. And my wife actually picked Pamela, mm-hmm. And so that's true. that's the pure gospel, right? That's true. Discipleship. It's not about some of the things, the boxes that we check so often, like, you know, did I go to church this week? Did I read my scriptures this many hours every day? Don't get me wrong. All of that is very, very important. I don't mean to say that, but true religion and undefiled, we know is going out and ministering to people. And that's the key to solving all of our ills, political or otherwise. It's not about having the right policy, although having the right policy matters. It's not about winning an argument on Facebook. It's really about people. And if we're waiting for the politicians to change that direction in our lives, then we're doing it wrong. Because ultimately our politicians are just a reflection of us. And so if we want to change the world, we shouldn't expect them to change the world. We have to change our world one at a time around us. And we do that by getting proximate. And getting proximate is what Pamela does. You get close to people. And when you get close to people, then it's impossible to other them. It's impossible to see them as something else, something different, something to fight against. It's impossible to see them as another tribe or as a threat to us. When we get close to people, whether they're our neighbors, whether they go to our church, hopefully people who are different than us, people who look different, people of different races, different religions, different sexual orientations, different whatever it is that makes them different and part of a quote unquote different tribe. When we get close to them, what we discover is the things we have in common are far greater than the things that that separate us. And that's how we change, and that's how we change the world. It really is one person at a time. It's leaving the 99 to find the one, and that one will change our lives, not just theirs. And I've seen that over and over again. And so I really just appreciate you guys, your message, the message of the BYU Management Society. In an increasingly dark world, the lights shine brighter, and we see those lights all around us. And anything we can do to share that light with others does not diminish our light, as Thomas Jefferson famously said. When we light someone else's candle, our candle doesn't get dimmer. We just have two candles, and that's really what you're doing is all about. And I'm so grateful that we have 3.3 million people here in the state of Utah that see the world the same way and are doing their best to light the world. So Merry Christmas, and thank you guys.
Well, Governor, like, thank you so much. We sure appreciate you being on and for taking the time. We know that you are so busy. And so thank you very much for your service. And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Voices of Light. Have a great day.